Hi, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth podcast, the Baby What a Big Surprise edition, as we preview Sunday's game against the Pittsburgh Steelers at Paul Brown Stadium and discuss this week's surprising news, the anticipated return of Cordy Glenn to the Bengals starting lineup. Coming up, you'll hear from offensive line coach Jim Turner on why the Bengals are giving Glenn another shot and what can be expected out of a guy who last appeared in a game in the second week of August. In my weekly pregame visit with Dave Lapham, we'll discuss the early struggles of quarterback Ryan Finley and how much longer he'll have the starting job if he doesn't start to show progress. My locker room conversation this week is with special teams coordinator Darren Simmons, whose unit is ranked number one in the NFL this year by the website Football Outsiders. We'll discuss that and a special teams rarity that Darren Simmons hopes to someday pull off. And in this week's Know the Foe segment, we'll talk to Steelers pregame host Tim Benz about the aftermath of the Myles Garrett, Mason Rudolph brouhaha. All of that is straight ahead, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since the ability to check scores at the touch of a button. It used to be hard to get sports scores. If you're as old as I am, you might remember Sports Phone, a number you could call to get frequently updated sports scores. It originally cost 10 cents a minute. Then ESPN and other sports networks came along, and you could watch the ticker and wait for the score you are interested in to scroll across the screen. Now, we can get any score of any game in any sport instantaneously on our phones or computers. For example, today in college basketball, St. Francis of Brooklyn beat Medgar Evers 122-58. A tough 64-point L for the Cougars. Now let's get to football. One of the most bizarre stories in a rough season for the Bengals has been the Cordy Glenn saga. Following the Bengals' second preseason game in mid-August, the highly paid left tackle reported having a concussion. Nobody thought much of it at the time, until Cordy remained in concussion protocol for days, then weeks, and ultimately, nearly 2 months. After being cleared by an independent neurologist and returning to practice in early October, Cordy reportedly got into a heated argument with a member of the coaching staff and did not show up for work the following day. That led to a one-game suspension and a hefty fine. Since then, Glenn has been on the scout team at practice and has been deactivated on game day. But after Ryan Finley got sacked 5 times last week in Oakland, including 3 times in the fourth quarter by rookie Max Crosby, head coach Zach Taylor announced on Wednesday that Glenn would practice with the first team. Following that practice, reporters asked offensive line coach Jim Turner if Glenn was likely to start this Sunday against the Steelers.
He's going to have a real good shot at it. So he's healthy, he's been cleared to go, and he's a good ball player, and we want him in there.
What does he bring to the table? I mean, other than he's bigger than a condo, but other than that, what are his other skill sets?
If you watch him over the years, I mean, he's been he's so massive, and he's athletic at that size, and he can definitely cover people up in the pass game. And then it's just a matter of in the run game, obviously with that size and power, you know, he can help us move that line of scrimmage a little bit. But pass protection is his big strength, of course, you know. So holding down that left side, especially in this game coming, that would be helpful.
Did you see a difference in him after what happened a couple weeks ago?
A difference in what?
In just his demeanor, the way he approached practice and was around here. I mean, have you sensed a difference in him over the last couple weeks?
I'm sure it's been frustrating for him, you know. So he hasn't been in there. It's been frustrating for all of us. So, you know, to have that type of asset there and not be able to use him is frustrating. So I'll tell you this. I have more respect for John, Jerry, and Andre than I have for any ball players that I've ever coached. So just for what they've been able to do, I'm asking John, Jerry to play a left tackle. John, Jerry's not a left tackle. And then Andre to come back the way he did and give us the support that he's given us and the reps that he's given us. You know, these both of these guys are older guys, and you know what these bodies go through.
Right.
And so for that, I'm grateful for those two players. And then, but to have Cordy back in the lineup, and, you know, he's obviously well-rested, so he's not beat up.
Right.
So there should be some juice there, and the kid looks excited to be there, so we're excited.
As you mentioned, he is well-rested. On the other hand, he hasn't played since preseason game two. How difficult is it going to be for Cordy at this point of the year to run out there?
Legitimate point. So there's a mystery there for all of us, but we are 0-10. All right, so we're trying to fight through that.
In other words, desperate times call for desperate measures. I sat down with Dave Lapham for this episode of the podcast just before Zach Taylor announced that Cordy Glenn would have a chance to return to the starting lineup. As you'll hear right off the bat, Lap had a feeling that it was a strong possibility. John Jerry really struggled last week at left tackle. He was signed to be a backup guard and an emergency. Play a few snaps at tackle if you absolutely have to do it. Well, he's been starting for several games at tackle. What should the Bengals do at this point?
Well, if Andre Smith isn't physically ready yet, I mean, the other option is Cordy Glenn. And I know that would sound distasteful to a lot of people, but you know what? Everybody has to swallow their ego, swallow their pride, and decide, okay, what's best for the offensive line? What's best for the football team to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers to win this football game? They got great edge rushers. I mean, you know, they come off the edge, you know, as well as anybody. And then, you know, push inside from Cam Hayward. But you got to control those edge guys. You got to control Watt. You got to control Dupree. Cordy Glenn is the best player that they have to play the left tackle position. And he's been practicing for a little bit. Been running the scout team. The other team's plays pretty much is the extent of his practice. But now it's now his football moral compass will be tested. Are you going to go out there and play? You're going to go out there and try to get it done. Give the best effort you possibly can to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers and help your football team. So I think that there's a strong chance they're going to have to go in that direction. And as I said, it might not be, you know, a real positive or popular decision for anybody. But it is what it is, as they say.
After two starts, Ryan Finley has completed 47.5% of his passes. He has a passer rating of 52.8. Zach Taylor said on Monday that Ryan will definitely start this week against the Steelers. How much rope do you think he has?
Well, initially Zach said that he's going to get 8 starts. You know, the plan was to play him the rest of the season. And I'm not sure that that's going to be deviated from. We'll have to see. Honestly, though, there's the old saying that I firmly believe in. It's never as good as you think it is, and it's never as bad as you think it is. When I went back and looked at the game again, Tyler Eifert did drop a contested catch that, you know, he can make. Tyler Boyd dropped a third down pass. Joe Mixon dropped a screen that could have gone for a touchdown. Touchdown. Giovanni Bernard dropped the third down ball. So there was a lot of plays that if those plays happen, you're looking at over 100 more yards to the passing game. And I'm not saying that's tremendous, but, you know, it would have been over 200 with the net with the sacks and everything takes it down to 70 whatever and 2 yards per attempt. So I'm not – what I'm saying is that there were other people contributed besides Ryan Finley to the woeful numbers of the passing game. And then, you know, Mad Max Crosby getting 4 sacks, potential AFC Defensive Player of the Week, makes me want to swallow my own vomit.
Please don't. Tyler Boyd was targeted 3 times last week. He had 1 catch for 0 yards. Did the Raiders make it that hard to get Tyler Boyd the ball?
He did have 1 drop on third down that, you know, was uncharacteristic of him, but there may be some frustration, you know, involved there. There was a safety over the top. I mean, Paul Gunther realized that he was the primary guy. He was the guy that he felt like he had to take away in the passing game, but you know, Tyler felt like there were plenty of times where he had opportunities, and any time they were playing man against him, he feels like he can beat man coverage, and he is. I mean, he's a great route runner. So I think you still have to – you can't give up on Tyler Boyd as a potential target, even if they are trying to take him away. Sometimes you, particularly like on fourth down play, is a great example. He went to Damian Willis into double coverage, and he had Tyler Boyd and Tyler Eifert on the other side of the field. Both Tyler Boyd had the first down. Tyler Eifert was running the same thing that Damian Willis was running the other side of the field. Looked like he had a better opportunity. Tyler Boyd was the clear-cut guy to go to get the first down. It shouldn't have been fourth down anyway if Giovanni Bernard holds on to the football, but that's another issue. So at times like that, forget the play. Think about the player and who's the guy that's done it the most, has the most experience, you know, playmaker. And you got to think, okay, I got to look at Tyler Boyd. I got to look at Tyler Eifert in this situation. And, you know, that's a learning experience. And next time maybe it'll turn out differently. But, you know, it is difficult when you can't make the defense respect the deep ball. You know, you can't stretch the defense without A.J. Green and John Ross. It's been a season-long problem. Can't take the top off the defense. We talked about it ad nauseum. They're playing in a closet. They're playing in a box. They're going to load the box to stop the run, and then they're going to, you know, make it very tough for receivers to get open on the short intermediate routes with tight coverage because they're not worried about anybody running by them. So it's a conundrum.
So how do you get big plays on offense when you don't have receivers with blazing speed?
You just have to scheme it up. You know, one of the most surprising touchdowns this year was the Arizona Cardinals when they blocked with eight guys and Tyler Boyd just ran a double move on a safety, isolated a safety and ran a double move on him and caught a 40-some-odd yard touchdown reception. You don't think that chunk play in that situation, the numbers games that you were facing were not favorable, and it happened. I mean, you do have to scheme things up instead of just saying, you know, this guy, I don't care what they do, this guy can get over the top of that guy. This guy's speed is too much to deal with. And, you know, even if he doesn't get over the top, he's going to remove so many people from the short and intermediate area that there's just space to work with. I mean, the whole thing is about space. And I think the window differential for the two quarterbacks, Finley's windows were about the size of a porthole that he was trying to thread, and Carr had, you know, sliding glass windows out to your patio to throw to. I mean, they got separation by scheme and, you know, athletic ability, and the Bengals didn't in that football game.
The Bengals had 173 rushing yards. That's their most since 2016, and it came after having 150-plus the week before. Are they building something sustainable in the ground game?
I think they are. I like the variation in the schematic in terms of, you know, the blocking scheme, blocking patterns, and instead of, you know, relying so much on inside-outside zone, they're running – you know, they're pinning a lineman by blocking down on him, and then they're pulling people. And you can call it, you know, gap scheme. You can call it power scheme, whatever you want to call it. Everybody's got different terminology for it. But basically, you're sealing one guy with a down block and pulling other people. And Joe Mixon's responding to it. The offensive linemen are responding to it. They've got guys that can pull. You know, Billy Price has played guard and center. Trey Hawkins has played guard and center. John Miller has played, you know, can pull. Bobby Hart's a mobile guy. He can pull. Everybody can pull. So it's not that they're not athletic enough up front to do it, and I think it's a good changeup. Plus, the other thing that it does, if you're a defensive lineman, instead of just playing inside-outside zone all the time, now you're getting hit from all angles. Now you have to think about, okay, man, are they going to down block on me here? Or instead of just like all I have to do is make sure that I really hold my own in this double team. I hold this gap, and I don't let them push me off the line of scrimmage, and, you know, now my linebacker is going to make plays. You got more to think about than just that. And that alone, I think, is a big, big plus, because defensive linemen, when they're getting hit from all angles, it slows them down, and it slows down their pass rush. It slows everything down.
The team MVP this year might be special teams coordinator Darren Simmons. Brandon Wilson leads the NFL in kickoff return average. Randy Bullock has made 12 out of his last 13 field goal tries. Kevin Huber is having his best net punting year in 5 years. Top to bottom, they have been solid on special teams.
You know, one site that everybody goes to with respect to the NFL special teams has the Bengals rated number one. And they're number two in kickoff returns. They're number 5 in kickoff coverage, and they're number 7 in punt coverage. They haven't had a whole lot of opportunity to return punts. Other teams haven't punted that much, quite honestly. And when they've punted, it's been, you know, directional kicking or, you know, trying to pin them back inside the 10-yard line with, you know, it'd be kicking into short field rather than long field where you get a lot of punt return opportunities. So they've only had 13 return opportunities all season long. So to think that an 0-10 football team is rated number 1 in special teams in the entire NFL is mind-boggling to me. The fact that they haven't been able to take advantage of favorable field position, everything that goes with it. The game that comes to mind is the Rams game in London. Hell, the Rams' average drive start was their 18-yard line. And you make them go long field after long field like that, didn't bother them much. You know, they won 85 yards for touchdowns multiple times. But, I mean, the special teams are giving an opportunity. They're just not playing complementary enough football offensively and defensively. But the special teams, the third phase, has consistently held up their end of the bargain. And I think Darren Simmons deserves a hell of a lot of credit for that because, you know, he's got a core of guys that that he works with. But there's been a lot of change, you know, with injuries and other things in the linebacker position, not a big contributor to Bengals special teams that other teams maybe have. And you look at it, Cedric Pierman, not just kickers, not just your snapper, holder, kicker, but the special teams guy that makes the Pro Bowl because of his excellence in terms of coverage and tackling and all that. Cedric Pierman, the running reverend, got it for a bit. Fedulum is in that mold. So, I mean, he coaches them up now. He coaches them up in every single way they can be coached up. And got to give Coach Combs some credit on this too. I mean, he's working in concert hand in hand with Darren Simmons. And Darren's been the staple here, though, for well over a decade and a half, and it's been a decade and a half plus of excellence.
The Bengals host the Steelers at Paul Brown Stadium, and this will be Pittsburgh's first game since the Myles Garrett Mason Rudolph helmet swinging incident. Rudolph has started 7 games. His best one was against the Bengals with a passer rating of 124.6. His worst game was last week in the loss to Cleveland. Passer rating of 36.3 with 4 interceptions. What must the Bengals do to limit Mason Rudolph and the Steelers?
Well, the interesting thing to me is what is his offensive coordinator going to do, Randy Fichtner? Is he going to do what he did against the Bengals where everything was shovel passes, screen passes, swing passes to the back out of the backfield? I think he went 24 for 28 or something ridiculous like that, and he never threw the ball downfield. There was one completion of over 40 yards where the Bengals blew a coverage, and it was wide open, and he made that throw. But Fichtner said, and this was early, this was, you know, fairly soon after Ben was ruled out for the rest of the season, and Fichtner went, he ran Wildcat with Samuel. You know, he went 3 for 3 with shovel passes. There were shovel passes, jet sweep stuff, shovel passes off the jet sweep, very short throws, get the confidence of the quarterback, you know, build it. See him with completions being made. Is he going to go back to that after that meager performance against the Cleveland Browns? I didn't really see any of that after the Bengals game. The element of surprise was done. They sprung it on the Bengals. You know, they had an extra day to prepare, Monday Night Football, and the Bengals had no clue what was coming, and they executed it. And they hadn't really run a whole lot of it since, in a tape I've seen of the Pittsburgh Steelers since. Well, they bring it out of mothballs. The Bengals are going to have to prepare for it. There's no question about that. They're going to take some of their preparation time having to deal with all that stuff that happened in the first game. So it'll be interesting to see what Fichtner does with Mason Rudolph after his worst performance as a starter in the NFL.
The Steelers are 5-5, despite losing Big Ben early in the season, and they can thank their defense. If the Bengals are going to have a chance this Sunday, they have got to limit the sacks and the giveaways.
No doubt about it, and that's Pittsburgh's MO. They got 34 sacks, 4th in the NFL, headed by T.J. Watt with 10.5, 3rd in the NFL. But the takeaways are incredible. I mean, they've got 26 on the season, second only to the Patriots' 27. They've got 14 interceptions. Minkah Fitzpatrick has 5 of them, tied for most in the NFL. And they've forced 21 fumbles and recovered 12. It's just ball security is paramount in this football game. I mean, they were plus 13 on the season before the Cleveland game. Now they still find themselves plus 9, tied for second best in the NFL in terms of turnover ratio.
but they're taking it away. I mean, it's just unbelievable how many more opportunities they were giving their offensive football team and taking possessions away from the opposing offense. So, yeah, Finley's going to have to be very sharp in terms of, you know, making sure to not turn the football over. The offensive line, if I'm an offensive lineman, I'm embarrassed by what happened in the first matchup on Monday night, 8 sacks. Cameron Hayward and his boys threw him around, and that's embarrassing. So I'm looking for a rematch, and you can't be -8 in the sack ratio department in any football game, because that affects hidden yards, that affects field position, that affects everything. Not in the mindset of your offensive lineman and the mindset of your quarterback. So with a rookie quarterback being his third NFL start, you can't expose him to that kind of pressure.
Now time for this week's locker room conversation. When you're 0-10, you don't expect to be ranked number one in anything but the projected draft order. But according to the number crunchers at the website Football Outsiders, the number one team in the NFL in overall special teams performance so far this year is Cincinnati. I talked to the man in charge. We're in the locker room with Bengals special teams coordinator Darren Simmons. Let's start with Brandon Wilson, who leads the NFL in kickoff return average at 36 yards a return. He's obviously fast. What else makes him so dangerous?
Well, I think the fact that he's had the ball in his hands before, you know, he's a former running back. I think that shows up. He's very instinctive. When he does have the ball, he can make cuts at speed, and he's not afraid. But I think the one thing that really sticks out is his past history as a running back shows up. I mean, people just think of him as a DB, but he also played running back in Houston too. So he's just very natural running the ball.
It's his third year here. Why didn't you use him earlier?
Well, because the guys that we had in the past, you know, didn't lose the job. You know, Alex was ranked highly in the league a couple years, and Brandon was a blocker for us. There's a time where, you know, Brandon wasn't even active the first half of his first year here. You know, the other part of it, too, is you got to feel confident in handling the ball and catching the ball cleanly. And he's, you know, progressed at that too. So obviously, you know, in hindsight, you wish we'd have put him back there sooner. But it's in the same token, you know, we start off the year with Alex. Alex gets dinged, or we start off the year with Darius. I'm sorry, Darius scores against Buffalo. So we've had a variety of guys who've been productive in that role. You know, obviously, Brandon's kind of taken it to a new level.
He's also tied for the team lead in special teams tackles. Is he building a Pro Bowl resume?
Well, as an all-around player, I think for sure. You know, he's been productive in his role the last, you know, 2 years. He's been a good gunner. Again, because he is fast, he is tough, he can tackle. All those things that you're looking for in a core special teams player, he has. You know, we haven't had to cover a bunch of kickoffs for him. He's been doing a good job of hitting touchbacks, but he's been in position to make plays even on kickoff, even though he hasn't really been called on to do them yet or had to do them, but he's been in position.
We're visiting with special teams coordinator Darren Simmons. The website Football Outsiders, which has a bunch of analytics on a wide variety of topics, has Cincinnati ranked number one for overall special teams performance so far this year. Who have been some of the unsung heroes in your group?
Well, I think right now the specials are doing a good job. You know, I think Kevin's had a very efficient year. He doesn't rank super high in terms of overall gross average, but we're not giving up much in the return game. I think that's a credit to him. He's doing a good job of placing the ball and putting our guys in position to make tackles or force fair catches. I think we've had as many fair catches you know, this year as he's ever had. I think Clark does a good job too. You know, they're rushing us more than they have in the past, which again frees up our gunners to be in single more to make more of those plays. I think Randy's kicked the ball pretty well too. Obviously, he had a little hiccup against the Raiders, but when those three guys do their job and do their jobs well, it makes the jobs of the rest of the guys easier. I think Jordan Evans has done a nice job for us this year. You know, he started off kind of with me, then he transitioned a year ago, becoming a defensive starter. Now he's kind of back with me again. He's played very solid. You know, a guy that we missed, really missed a year ago was Seathan Carter. I think Seathan Carter's playing well. We've been getting contributions from a lot of different guys. Tony McRae's played very well this whole year. It hadn't been really one guy. It's been they've played pretty really well as a unit. They believe in each other. It's a lot of fun to coach them right now. I know we're not having a bunch of success as a team, but these guys are as good a group, as fun a group of guys, because they really believe they're going to make every play. And as a coach, that's all you can ask for.
Darren, you're the longest tenured coach on this staff. You came with Marvin originally in 2003. How big of an adjustment has it been for you being part of a completely different staff this year?
I think just the staff dynamics are a little different. You know, it's kind of like when I first came in here in 2003. You don't know a lot of these guys. I haven't had the chance to work with very many of them. But it's getting a feel for how Zach wants things done, and I think permeating that same theme through the rest of the team, and through my group specifically, and trying to spread his message. And that's not been a challenge. It's been different. I think the way we practice is a little different. The way we conduct day-to-day business is a little different. There's transition when it comes to that stuff. You get kind of set in your ways when you do it one way for 16 years in a row, and then when that changes, it becomes different. But in addition to that too, it kind of stimulates me to change. You know, and makes me think about things in a different way. So that part I've been very thankful for.
Final question for special teams coordinator Darren Simmons. My favorite special teams play almost happened in mid-October. The fair catch free kick. So for people that aren't aware of it, you can fair catch a punt, and if you do it within field goal range, the other team has to stand 10 yards away. So there are a limited set of circumstances where you would even try it. Mm-hmm. But what do you think? Is that something that, like, in the back of your mind as a special teams coordinator, you're always dreaming that maybe it'll work out?
Oh, absolutely. There's a couple things that have to happen. Obviously, anytime you fair catch a punt, this could happen at any point in the game, you have the opportunity to do two things. One, you can put it in play with an offensive snap, which happens 99.9% of the time. Or B, you can take a fair catch free kick, which means you take a field goal from the spot of the fair catch, and they can't rush you. And if you kick it through the goalpost, you get 3 points. That could happen at any point in the game. But the unique set of circumstances where that comes into play, it could be the end of the half or the end of a game, and you do not have to have time on the clock for a fair catch free kick. So if you have the opponent backed up, he's punting out of his own end zone, there's 2 seconds left in the half, he punts it to you, and you fair catch it, time expires. There's zero time left on the clock, so obviously you can't put the ball in play with an offensive snap, but you can take a fair catch free kick. So I'd love to have the opportunity to have somebody backed up and force him to punt with, you know, inside of 5 or 6 seconds to go, and execute a fair catch and get the chance to do it. That would be, you know, one of those plays you kind of dream of, to be awesome to be able to execute. One of these days we'll get the chance to go out and do it, and hopefully when we do, our players will be very comfortable and know exactly how to execute it.
I love it. Now I know it can be done with no time left on the clock. Congratulations on the special teams performance so far this season. I always appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I
appreciate you having me.
That's Darren Simmons. Earlier this year, Carolina kicker Joey Sly attempted a 60-yard field goal on a fair catch free kick at the end of a half, but missed it. The last kicker to make one was the Chargers' Ray Wershing way back in 1976. Now time for this week's Know the Foe segment. Tim Benz is a Pittsburgh sports columnist and talk show host, and joined Dave Lapham and me on the Bengals Game Plan show this week. Normally, we take an in-depth look at the Bengals' upcoming opponent, but this week, most of our conversation with Tim revolved around last week's helmet-swinging fracas between Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph. I started out by asking Tim if Myles Garrett has replaced Vontaze Burfict as public enemy number one in Pittsburgh.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, he has. I can't believe it's possible, but I think that's a very apt comparison. I don't think Myles has the track record that Vontaze does yet, but he's well on his way. And I think you're onto something there, Dan.
Let me ask you a question about Mason Rudolph. Everybody's up in arms that he has not been suspended. He's going to receive a fine, obviously. And everybody said, well, he exacerbated it when he went, you know, after Myles Garrett a second time. In my opinion, when I saw it, I said, Mason Rudolph was just reacting that he lost his helmet. He's trying to get his helmet back. You don't want to be on a football field in an altercation without a helmet on your head, because what can happen is exactly what happened. You might take a shot from somebody's fist or a helmet, whatever. You don't want to be exposed like that. So in my mind, he wasn't going after Myles Garrett. He dove right after his helmet. He was going after his helmet. And to me, he wasn't trying to prolong any kind of a fight, I don't think, with Myles Garrett. I mean, what am I wrong on that or am I right?
The narrative that Mason Rudolph is somehow responsible for what happened is about one of the dumbest things I've come across in my time covering sports. It just shows you how I think social media has softened our brains and has made all of us try to think we're smarter than we are by looking for some dumb excuse to marginalize what somebody did. And that's exactly what's happening here. You know, I think it's funny that O.J. Simpson has been the guy to advance this more than anybody else, because inferring that Mason Rudolph is at fault is sort of like saying Ron Goldman was at fault for delivering the sunglasses to Nicole. It's absolutely asinine. How do you blame Mason Rudolph when he was the one that got thrown to the ground late, tried to get up, this notion that he was Danielson from the Karate Kid and kicked Myles Garrett in the groin is a joke. He was getting pulled up by his face mask. He's trying to separate himself from Garrett. People are working so hard to marginalize or alleviate the responsibility from Myles Garrett, and I don't know why. He's got a track record, and he did something despicable.
Pittsburgh sports columnist and Steelers pregame host Tim Benz is our guest. I do want to ask you about Mike Tomlin's comments at a news conference yesterday. He was asked what the Steelers could learn from that incident, and he said, quote, "I don't know that we did anything to make it happen in the first place. That's why I said we didn't have anything to learn from it." Did he mean that the way it sounds? I mean, I agree with you that what Myles Garrett did was infinitely worse than anything you could possibly suggest that Mason Rudolph did. Having said that, it doesn't seem to me the Steelers were completely blameless.
Where would you affix the blame that he would be wrong in that statement then?
Well, what about Pouncey, who's now suspended for 3 games for kicking a guy in the head? Is that conduct that Mike Tomlin condones?
I think he condones it, but I think what Garrett did was so above and beyond the pale that I think that at that point Pouncey just lost his mind and said, "I have to keep this guy from doing anything further." I think what Garrett did was so differentiating from any other behavior that football players have seen on the field that there has to be a little latitude in how they responded. Both, you know, what Pouncey did initially and then even beyond when he kicked him. I think at that point it suppressed the crazy man who is so unhinged that he's swinging the helmet. And, I think one game is the absolute most from Pouncey. And if Tomlin came off sounding curt for ignoring that part of the equation, I don't blame him for that, because I think Garrett is incredibly at fault here.
I have no problem with Pouncey restraining him, you know, pin him, punch him in the gut, kicking him in the head. That's not restraining. That's trying to get your shots in. There's a big difference there. Big difference. And that's why
he was
suspended.
Do you think it's trying to restrain him, or do you think it's trying to stop him? Because I viewed it as trying to
stop I think it's trying to damage him. He's got, you know, DeCastro's got him on the ground and he's kicking him in the head. I mean, you know, the restraining was being done by DeCastro. Pouncey could have helped restrain him. Pouncey decided to take some shots with his punching and then kick him in the head. I mean,
let me ask you this, Dave, especially back when you were playing, before everybody was so suspension and fine crazy, I think, and I don't know about this, but I think that Filer and DeCastro clear Garrett off the pile before any of that happened. But everybody is so tentative anymore that they didn't do that, and they were looking for the ref to blow the whistle or do something about it. And I think that's part of the reason why it went nuts. It's because these guys are afraid of getting fined and suspended in the first place, because I bet you those two were fighting the natural reaction to get Garrett off of Mason Rudolph to begin with.
All I can say is, in any era of football, when I played or before or after, kicking is termed as cowardly. I mean, kicking is not something that you do. I mean, it's like if you see a street fight and somebody has a guy down on the ground, the other one's kicking him, it's like, what the hell is that? I mean, the kicking stuff, that's why he's suspended for 3 games, and it might be reduced, but, I mean, the suspension is for him kicking him. I mean, that's a bad look, too. You don't want kids watching a football game and a fight breaks out and hitting them with the helmets is inexcusable. But kicking him is not a good sign. It's not a good look. It just isn't. I mean,
it isn't. And if you want him to apologize, like, I thought he did that at the beginning of the press conference. I thought he said, we own a portion of what took place, and I don't know what else he could possibly be referring to besides that, unless he really feels like Mason Rudolph acted out too much. And I'll be frank with you, I think Mason Rudolph kind of got bullied into making that apology, or the team got bullied into making him make that apology because of
the
social media reaction.
He read an apology. Yeah. It wasn't like a heartfelt apology. He read the thing, yeah. I agree.
Well, I think he's sincerely sorry because of what he did, got Pouncey suspended. I think he's sorry about that. And, you know, he did go off script and start looking out the cameras and say, look, I lost my cool and I shouldn't have done that. But again, I don't know what player has the wherewithal at that point to say, after being thrown to the turf late, you know, I'm not going to push back or I'm not going to get in the guy's face.
I disagree that Rudolph should apologize for Pouncey getting suspended. Pouncey did something that got Pouncey suspended. Rudolph didn't. Pouncey did. Pouncey by kicking. I mean, to me, that's the separating point. I would have no problem of him laying on top of him, pinning him down, punching him, but kicking him in the head when somebody, no go. If that happens in a fight on the field in the day, everybody would grab the guy that did kicking and wail on his tail.
Well, you're probably right on it, and I'm wrong. And, you know, the NFL decided to suspend him, but I think there's nothing more cowardly than swinging a helmet at somebody else's head.
I totally agree. Totally agree. And he should be suspended for more than 6 games. But I got no problem with Pouncey being suspended for as many games as he is for kicking a guy when he's down in the head and he's being pinned by somebody else. I mean, you know, I think that's a cowardly act as well.
Our guest is Tim Benz, Pittsburgh sports columnist and Steelers pregame host. Didn't intend for this to be entirely about that incident. We got you for a couple more minutes, so let's at least hit on a couple of other topics.
It's been for a week here. That's all I can anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure you've covered this topic a little bit in Pittsburgh, but let's hit on a couple of other things before we let you go. Number one, or I guess number two, after all we've been talking about to this point.
The whole incident's number two.
Yeah. the status of some key Steelers going into this game. Juju Smith-Schuster, James Conner, Deontay Johnson. I mean, Pouncey's already out because he's suspended. How limited are the Steelers going to be in this game?
Very limited throwing the ball. Juju Smith-Schuster, even though he hasn't had a good year, is still the number one receiving threat and draws all sorts of attention from opposing defenses, and other guys still can't get open. So I can't imagine how hard it's going to be for people to get open when Juju isn't being doubled all the time. So that's going to be a problem. Rudolph's had problems delivering the ball on the rare occasions when players have been open. You know, like you talked about, the running back, James Conner, is out. They were so good running the jet sweep, misdirection, extended handoff, shovel pass, wildcat stuff against the Bengals the first time. I don't know. Maybe that comes back. Maybe that comes back a little bit. I know that both Jalen Samuels and Mike Tomlin intimated, both coming out of the Bengal game last time and this week going into it, that there are some matchup things that they think that they liked about playing against the Bengals where that wildcat came into play. I don't know if it's as prominent as it was back in week four on Monday Night Football, but with Benny Snell being the other running back now, maybe they try to do some of that again to insulate the passing game even further because the weapons are so scaled back with the knee injury to Juju on top of the concussion. Deontay Johnson at least practiced today, so that's a good thing from their standpoint, but they are limited skill position-wise for sure.
I agree with you, though, because the jet sweep, the shovel pass, the wildcat, haven't seen very little of it since the Bengals game, but we talked about it earlier in the week. I mean, obviously the Bengals are going to be preparing for it. It's going to be a big part of their preparation time during the week. You know, it's going to take away from preparing for things they maybe have run the week since they played the Bengals. But with all that's going on in terms of player availability, you got to be able to defend it better than you did the first time, that's for sure, on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, and Benny Snell is a guy who they drafted to be a short yardage option, to be a closer at the end of games, and he's been so injured and unavailable during the course of games this year that we haven't been able to see that much yet in Pittsburgh. And their biggest struggle of late, especially in that Browns game, is on third and short, fourth and short. And I'm wondering if they can feature him and just run between the tackles more effectively. I mean, with Mason Rudolph struggling the way that he is, I think they had seven chances, third and fourth and short, and they threw five of them because the line was so poor in moving the pile even 6 feet. There's a real kind of, chicken and egg debate there. Are you getting too complicated because the line can't block and get the fourth down, third downs that way, or should you just make it simple and go behind the line and make them get better at it? I'm leaning towards the latter.
Our thanks to Tim Benz, and that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe, and if you have time, give it a rating or share a comment. Those 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Horde, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.